As you all know by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code JUSTBASEBALL and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. 1. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code JUSTBASEBALL. 2. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. 3. You will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if your bet loses. Just make sure you use bonus code JUSTBASEBALL when you sign up. Disclaimer. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions and must be 21 or older to wager. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, and 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code JUSTBASEBALL and get your $1,500 first bet offer today.
Conclude the week with us on the Just Baseball Show. Is it December? I think there are 30 days in November. We're recording on November 30th, Thursday. Tomorrow is...
We're in the off-season blob. It could be February. It could be November. It could be Thanksgiving. It could be Christmas. It could be Hanukkah. It could be Kwanzaa. I don't know. I want to talk baseball.
It's December 1. Rabbit, happy December. Welcome to the month that the winter meetings happen. And this is the last time we talk to you before the winter meetings start in Nashville. Jack, Peter, Just Baseball Show on Friday, December 1st. Jackson Chorio could be signing an 8-year, $80 million deal with a pair of club options. That's what Heyman has. It has not been made official just yet, but we're going to talk about it like it is official because we think there's a chance that that happens after we record and before you listen to this. The Reds got a little active, and the NL Central as a whole is pretty active. Luis Severino signs with the Mets, 1-year, $13 million. And then we're going to conclude National League Week by looking at the season that was in the National League West. Peter, brought to you by
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, people. Come on and sign up and deposit into your newly created account using promo code JUSTBASEBALL. Download the BetMGM Sports app on iOS or Android or visit BetMGM.com. Place your first bet offer and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if it loses. If the bet does lose, your bonus bets will be available once the wager is settled. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Must be 21 or older and terms and conditions apply. The Jackson Chorio signing is incredibly, incredibly interesting.
It's very interesting, and I'm going to give you the primer right now, and then we're going to dive a little bit farther into what this contract could mean. But you probably know that Jackson Chorio is a top three prospect in baseball. We've got him at number three in Just Baseball's top 100. But who is this cat? You see that he signs for $80 million. You probably haven't watched him play a game of baseball yet. He won't turn 20 years old until March 11th, but he's already got a whole year under his belt in Double-A and his Triple-A debut in the rearview mirror as well. Last year with Biloxi, who's the Double-A affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers, he hit 280 with 22 homers, 89 driven in, and 43 bags on 52 attempts. Those are the numbers over 122 games, a full season sample. The numbers are good, but he leveled up in his last 55 Double-A games. Remember, his age 19 season. In his last 55, since July 1, Chorio hit .312 with an OPS two ticks under 900 at .898. He had 25 extra base hits, 42 RBIs in 55 games. He stole 21 bags during that stretch. He's hit a ball 112 miles an hour as a 19-year-old. Aram, in his write-up, ends it by saying he believes this guy is a true 30-30 threat with staying power in center field. The reported deal from John Heyman is 8 years for around $80 million with two club options on the back end. That would shatter Luis Robert's previous record for a guy that has yet to make their major league debut. Robert signed 6 years, $50 million with the White Sox in 2020. There are a lot of layers to this. I'm going to tell you what my thinking is on how this contract came to be. Yes, I think Robert's the good example to look at. Acuña signed eight for 100. I don't think that's the best example because Acuña had already played a full season of Major League Baseball. Since Robert signed this deal, we've seen a lot of guys that have a good first cameo in baseball sign these very long-term deals. Julio Rodriguez, Wander Franco signed one. Fernando Tatis Jr. signed one. But I think the one that Chorio's agent probably pointed to and said, we want something like that, is Corbin Carroll last year. And I think that Chorio is the closest thing that we've got to Corbin Carroll in the minor leagues, where it's a true 30-30 threat, a good defender. Carroll stole 54 bags this year, but he had 25 pumps. He had an 850 OPS or like an 830 OPS in 32 games last year. And they still gave him a deal where I personally sat here and thought, that's a lot of money for a guy that's played 32 major league games. But we learned this year that Carroll is worth every penny of that deal. And I think the Brewers ID'd their version of Corbin Carroll. Everybody wants a piece. And I think that they're trying to replicate what Arizona got with their guy.
No doubt about it. So you mentioned he shattered Luis Robert's record, 6 years, $50 million, which was the largest extension with zero MLB service time. But there have been a couple others. Eloy Jimenez, 6 years, $43 million. Evan White, if we remember with the Seattle Mariners, looked like the greatest fielding first baseman of all time. And if he could just hit, he was going to be this amazing player. Didn't end up being the case. Scott Kingery, remember him, Phillies fans? 6 years, $24 million. And then John Singleton. We saw him in the World Series, but we haven't seen him much with the Houston Astros. 5 years, $10 million. So this almost doubled Luis Robert Jr.'s record at 6 years, $50 million. So when it first came across the ticker from John Heyman, you know, we talk in our Just Baseball group chat. And obviously, you know, as me, the person who knows the least about prospects between the three of us here on the Just Baseball show, my mouth dropped open and I was like, guys, I know he's good. I know, obviously he's good. We rank him really high. I read the write-up. I've watched the video. He's obviously amazing. But come on, this amazing? And then what was the response in the group chat, Jack?
I don't know. Was it yes? He shows you days that go by where I don't read it sometimes.
It was a one-word answer. Yes.
Yes.
Like, this guy has the potential, right? We're talking 30-30. But with the new stolen base rules, when you have 30 stolen base speed with new rules, then we look at 50, right? And would you argue he has more or less power than Corbin Carroll?
He has more raw power. I think that he can get into more power, but I think the game power played up for Carroll. But a reminder, like, Corbin Carroll's 23 years old. He signed this contract when he was 22. Chorio is going to sign this when he's 19. He's got 3 years on Carroll. So there is way more power to dream on, I think, with Jackson Chorio. But in terms of game power right now, I'll give the edge to the guy that has, you know, 3 more years of puberty down the chute.
More than fair. Jackson Chorio, 19 years old in the Brewers system. They truly do have a potential superstar on their hands.
Yes.
And I think the big point, too, is here, center field, right? This isn't a right fielder. This isn't a third baseman. This is a center fielder, up the middle, defense, staying power there. We also have to remember, and I say this all the time, and it gets a chuckle from you every time, but we have to talk about it. He's 2 years younger than Dylan Cruz, 2 years younger than Wyatt Langford. Just to put that in perspective here, this guy could be a sophomore at Coastal Carolina, but he's in AAA with the Brewers doing this shit. 8 years, 80. I think the Brewers are going to look back on this and say, yeah, we underpaid him, even though it seems like a massive overpay before he's taken a step on the field.
So Aram's write-up is great, and I'll link it in the episode description here. So if you do want to go read Aram's write-up on Jackson Chourio to kind of get the 811 on who this guy is, you know, to an even deeper level, go do that. Highly recommended reading. That's kind of your homework, I guess, on this Friday or over the weekend. But
homework.
Yeah, homework. But Chourio, like, Aram and I were doing a draft on the call-up. We weren't doing a draft. It was like, create your Frankenstein. Your best possible prospect.
Love that episode.
Yeah, it was fun. And I chose Victor Scott's speed because he stole like 90 bags this year in the minor leagues. He chose Chourio's speed. It's like, really? He said, dude, he could be the fastest guy in the minor leagues. So not only are we talking about the fastest guy in the minor leagues, but a teenager that has pumped a ball 112 miles an hour.
Not normal.
I'd say it's going to be more of an uphill battle to get to the 30 homers than the 30 bags for Chourio, but the defense helps. He chases a little bit, but a 19-year-old in the upper minors is going to chase a little bit.
So he's not perfect. He's not God.
I will say that Carroll was less flawed than Chourio when he signed. Like, Corbin Carroll had plate discipline. He was walking at a 12.5%, 13% clip. Chourio doesn't do that yet. But yeah, Chourio, but
Carroll's old news, right? What is he, 23?
He's ancient? 23. Yeah. Ancient. No, I think he's got an AARP account now.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, man, I think that this is really fun. Now the second layer has to do with what the Milwaukee Brewers are going to do, I think, in the next week. I think at the winter meetings. Chourio signing this deal creates no situation where it benefits the Milwaukee Brewers to have him in Nashville in the first month. If they feel like he needs to spend a month in AAA, sure. But he
probably will. He probably will.
I don't know, man.
You don't think you're going to soak up maybe an extra year of service time? I guess
you can't.
Why would you? Yeah, why would you? Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. No, I.
So there's no financial reason to have him buried, not on the major league roster. I think this is Matt Arnold showing his hand and saying that Jackson Chourio is going to be the opening day center fielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. So I think that displaces two guys that in turn can net them a three. Garrett Mitchell coming off of injury, who I think is damn good.
Me too.
And Joey Weimer, who I think is damn good. Do they want to move two of those, or do they want to move Mitchell or Weimer and then Tyrone Taylor and then, you know, more guys like that to go get a four? You can, but close your eyes and envision the Milwaukee Brewers outfield for the next 5 years. I see Yelich in left, Chourio in center, Frelick in right.
You could also, and now you could go the other way. Do you package one of these guys with Yelich in order to get off his contract and send them somewhere?
I don't think so.
Depending on what the Brewers want to do, right? But I think the main point of it is they are in a spot where they have a surplus of these guys where they can be very, very creative. Do the Brewers decide, all right, our window is still open. We want to keep Burns. We still think that we can compete. We did win 92 games last year. Let's keep it moving and let's go buy. But they could do that as well. Like, if Burns is on the block and they're putting more and more guys up and available for trades, as the reports have said, could they be strategic with the Yelich contract to get that off the books as well? Because Yelich, it's not going to be the hardest contract to sell. And then when you add a guy like Frelick or Weimer or Mitchell, depending on what kind of trade you want to do, in order to get a big haul in the farm system, that's what they could also do. To your point, I think what you're saying is more likely. I'm just trying to say that every option is now on the table for them.
Yeah. Another off the walls one that I am going to pitch. Like, I'm just going to do it. He hasn't played. He hasn't played any infield in pro ball. If I'm not mistaken, he didn't play any infield in college ball. But summer ball, I think for two seasons, Sal Frelick was a shortstop second baseman.
Okay.
We saw Mookie make the transition this year.
Not impossible.
If you gave Sal Frelick an offseason to commit to learning second base, Sal's a better option than Terang, is he not?
Is he? No, Sal Frelick's a better hitter, but like, I like Terang. You and Arm don't like Terang.
No, I like Terang. Okay. I like Terang defensively.
Soft. Yeah, exactly. He's a soft hitting second baseman. Yeah, I mean, it depends how well Frelick could maneuver over there. It would be second, of course, because they have Adames, but you know, I've heard Adames
is on his final year.
Rumors. Yeah, like, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe Yelich. Short.
Put Yelich.
We're in the offseason. Let's just start firing shit.
Where's Luis Urias when you need him? Sorry, yeah. He's been DFA'd twice. Yeah, but I do like this move. I like the aggression from them. I don't know what this means for the grand scheme of Corbin Burns' immediate future in Milwaukee and Adames' future in Milwaukee and Devin Williams' future in Milwaukee, because this is a deal that transcends 2024. But all of our questions surrounding the Milwaukee Brewers are for 2024. They've got their center fielder locked up, it seems, long term. Now I just need way more questions answered. I have less and less questions about the Cincinnati Reds as the last 24 hours have gone along. They signed Emilio Pagan to a 2-year deal, and they signed Nick Martinez to a 2-year deal. Martinez opted out of 2-for-18 with San Diego, and I think got 2-for-22 on Wednesday night. I like Martinez and that signing more than Emilio Pagan, but you do get, you know, a seventh, eighth inning guy in Pagan, hoping that he recaptures some of that magic that he's had in recent years. Martinez, I think is great because obviously he was a good swing man for San Diego. They needed starting pitching so badly last year. And I think that this guy is a great security blanket where he's probably in the opening day rotation. And if all these young arms work out and you can run out a starting five of Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft, Abbott, Phillips, you can move Martinez to that multi-inning swingman reliever type role.
And I would rather have Martinez than Connor Phillips anyway. And that's why I like the Nick Martinez signing. Like, I think he's a decent starter. And if he's not, like you said, he can transition into a bullpen role and perform very well. Now, he is not an innings eater. When he toes the rubber for the Cincinnati Reds in July, don't expect more than 4 innings. Maybe he'll get to the 5th, but that's not really his role, right? His role is, when one of your guys gets bombed, he can come in and weather the storm, but while also being effective. So I like the Nick Martinez signing. I think Nick Martinez was correct in opting out. And of course he was, because he got more money. And I think he's a good fit with the Cincinnati Reds. I would give, I don't know, a letter grade to a Nick Martinez 2-year deal. But what I will say is I do like it. The one I am very confused about and was surprised to see 2 years for this guy is Emilio Pagan. Because the Minnesota Twins, they kind of showed their hand in the playoffs. Emilio Pagan was not the guy coming in the 9th inning. That was Yoan Duran. He wasn't the guy coming in the 8th inning. That was Griffin Jacks. Now, we sometimes saw him in the 6th or the 7th on occasions. But more often than not, Pagan was not the guy that they went to with a 1-run lead in the 7th inning. Now, we saw him in spurts, definitely in the regular season. But I wouldn't call him a good high leverage reliever. I would call him a good reliever. That's kind of the bucket I would put him in, just to be simple, right? So to see 2 years on him, I was pretty surprised about. The Reds must see something in his pitch mix, because Emilio Pagan was a batting practice thrower, you know, not last year, but the year before.
In San Diego.
Home run problem. Yeah, it was due to a home run problem. He goes to the Twins. He looks a little bit better. He has a better overall season. And the Reds must have seen something. But still, 2 years, like, who is competing against the Reds in the Emilio Pagan market for them to say, you know what, we want to do a 2-year deal?
I don't think so. I think that there was probably a cluster of 1-year deals, and Cincinnati was like, hey, we'll separate ourselves with a 2, and that's probably okay. But Pagan is coming off his first sub-3 ERA year since he was in Tampa in 2019, and that was second year with Minnesota. His 2 years in San Diego were not good. He had an ERA just under 5 in those 2 years. First year in Minnesota still had the home run problem, but the whiffs went up. And then this past year, a 2.99 in 66 appearances. Opponents hit about .180 against him. He was striking out fewer guys, but he was constantly commanding at the bottom of the zone. And I wonder what the ground ball rate did. It was still low.
Yeah, he was effective. It's just, you know, I feel like you can see what the manager and the team thinks about you when the going gets tough.
Yeah, I think they're looking at him as the seventh inning guy. Like, they just paid, you know, across 2 years for a seventh inning guy, because Diaz has the 9th. Does Jabot have the 8th?
Probably.
I like Ian Jabot.
Yeah, I don't mind him either.
So,
but like, would you give Ian Jabot a 2-year deal right now? Like,
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, like I don't know why they gave him a 2-year deal. Now, is it what you said and they just had to kind of separate themselves? Sure. But is he the guy you separate yourself for?
No.
They must see something there. And the Reds have been pretty good at IDing these kind of guys. So I can get around to it. I'm glad that they're buying, though. This isn't what a bad deal. What I'm telling all the people listening is when I saw 2 years, I was pretty surprised. Could it work out? Absolutely. If he gives you a 3.5 ERA over the next 2 seasons, 2-year deal, we'll take that. I just don't know if he does, especially in Great American. But that's not their fault. That's the park they play in.
So Reynaldo Lopez signed a 3-year deal. In terms of available relievers, I'm not separating on Hader because Hader is going to get big money.
I'd rather have Reynaldo Lopez. Reynaldo Lopez has incredible stuff, and he has closer upside. Like, that I get. Now, 3 years is still a lot for that. Like, that's someone I would put in the 2-year bucket. I guess that's just how I view the reliever market, and it's changing in a way that I don't agree with, but who cares what I agree with? It's the lay of the land. I wouldn't have given Taiwan Walker $70 million either. Look where we are.
I would separate on Hector Neris.
I'd rather have Neris than Pagan.
Yeah. I would separate on Jordan Hicks, I think. 103 is 103, man.
But he has no idea where it's going. And like, sometimes he can look great. He's not available that much. I'd rather have Pagan than Jordan Hicks.
I disagree. I'd rather have Hicks than Pagan.
It's more exciting. It's good when you need a guy to throw at someone. I don't love Jordan Hicks. I don't know if I ever have.
Neris is
103 is 103. 103 is 103, but like, there's a lot of 100s out there. It's not 103 and everybody's 96.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Which is the league Chapman entered. And the league that Hicks entered is a different league.
Exactly. He could be very effective. I'm not saying he's bad. It's just like, there's a lot of wide-ranging outcomes. On a reliever, do I want to pay that? Not particularly.
No, I think the only guy that I'm really giving a 2-year deal, I mean, Hader I would, but Neris is the one that I'm giving a 2-year, $25 million deal to.
Definitely. I would as well.
Last one before we get into the NL West is Luis Severino, who signed 1 year for $13 million with the New York Mets. Floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, the fall of Luis Severino is really, really sad, right? A couple of years ago, Yankee fans remember there was a cover, I think it was on Sports Illustrated, that Addison posted. Shout out Addison. Forget his Twitter username.
Yankee World. Pull it up.
Yankee World. He's awesome. He pulled it up and it made me a little sad. Gary Sanchez, Greg Bird, Aaron Judge, and Luis Severino were on the cover of that one. And all three of those are not Yankees, except for Aaron Judge, of course. But Luis Severino was a Cy Young finalist. This guy was electric. He was throwing 97, 99 miles an hour, touching 100 miles an hour, had some great years with the Yankees. But these past couple of years have been plagued by injury. We saw the stuff start to come back at the end of the year. However, the location has not been good, leaving so much stuff right in the middle of the zone. And hitters are teeing off, and his arm seems to fall apart as soon as he gets something good going. So when I saw 1 year, $13 million, I thought to myself, that's exactly why I like the Kyle Gibson signing to the Cardinals. He signed for 1 year, $12 million, right? Would you rather have Kyle Gibson or would you rather have Luis Severino? Now, you might say, well, I'd rather have Luis Severino. Look at the upside. I'd rather rely on the safety here because, yes, could Luis Severino completely find it, go all the way back? What's more likely, that or Kyle Gibson throwing 170 innings at a 4-3? I think we know the answer to that one. Who got more? Luis Severino did because he has more electric stuff. I think this was the classic. Steve Cohen has a ton of money. Let's take a gamble. Could it work? Maybe. I'd venture to say that it doesn't, right? And I said this at the beginning of the offseason, maybe the end of the season. If the Dodgers get Luis Severino or teams like that, that means they saw something. I trust David Stearns. And maybe he found something. Teams often... The type of teams that sign these players, I have my reservations about. It was a lot of money, I thought, even though it's not the biggest gamble in the world, and it's a different type of owner, and Steve Cohen, who has $10 trillion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be super excited if I'm a Mets fan.
Something's changing with Luis Severino. And I do think that you are not overwhelmingly negative, because I'm a little negative too, but I do think that you're a bit jaded by Luis Severino because you've ridden the roller coaster over the last couple of years. My immediate reaction to this was, he only got 1 year. I was expecting him to get a 2-year deal. He's 30.
I'd be pretty surprised if he makes 20 to 25 starts this year.
So we will see. What I will say is,
I hope he does. Now, I'm rooting. Yeah. Well, I want to be clear. I am rooting for this. I hope he makes 30 starts and wins the Cy Young. I just have my doubts.
Yeah. No, and listen, that's totally valid. I had my Rodon doubts when he hit the open market, and those kind of came to fruition after that year in San Francisco. So I will say, when Sevy is on the hill and he hasn't been entirely unavailable, he's been unavailable, but not, you know, invisible. He threw 90 innings this year. They're spread out, but it's 90 innings regardless. And he did still sit 96, 97. I just want to know what happened to the fastball, because I'll like try and hop into the vertical shape and the horizontal shape and all that. But he threw his four seamer 48% of the time in 2022. Opponents hit .186 against it. They slugged under 400. This year, he threw his four seamer 45% of the time. It was harder. He sat 96.3 in 2022. He sat 96.5 in 2023. But opponents hit .350 with a .690 slug against his fastball. Was it location?
What was the difference in spin rate?
Identical. Spin was 10 RPMs up this year.
Interesting. Yes. Location, 1,000%. Go look at the heat map. Right in the middle of that shit.
It is
right in the middle of the zone. But it's more than that. When I've watched thousands, what it feels like of Severino starts. Obviously, he hasn't made 1,000, but I've seen plenty of his starts over the years. The fastball did not have the same life. There was a time where Luis Severino would chuck his fastball, and it would have a Yordano Ventura type to it, where it's just such a whippy arm motion and a thing that looked like it flying up into the zone. It didn't look like that. It looked straight. And while the velocity was still there, I'm actually surprised to hear that the spin rates weren't any different, because it didn't have close to the type of life. It didn't have close to the same location. And his off-speed pitches, they were all over the place. If the Mets can somehow refine him, get him back to the way he was, of course, you got a potential elite number two. But I think the market is kind of telling you something. The Yankees, their rotation is not shored up. Why didn't they bring back Severino 1 year deal, right? And then other teams. Why didn't he get a 2 year deal, Jack? I think the writing's on the wall for him.
He lost some vertical break, it seems, on his four seamer. That's my big takeaway. Writing could be
so
on the wall.
He did lose that. So he did lose that. Okay.
Yeah. He is 29. He's going to turn 30 before opening day. Like, I don't know. I hope the writing isn't on the wall, but it might be.
It might be. I mean, this happens to guys. Right? Yeah. They have an electric 3 or 4 years, and some guys just phase out.
You make a nice point. All right. We are going to talk NL West. We're going to do the season in review in the National League West. But before that, quick break. National League West. Here's the deal. We are going to plug the preseason win total set by our friends at BetMGM. We're going to tell you where they finished, the difference, and then where Peter Aram and I had our selection in the preseason. We were kind of in a consensus when we did this. We had three teams where it was a complete sweep. Aram disagreed with us on one of them, and I disagreed with you guys on another one of them. But
did I do terrible again?
I don't think so, because okay. Like, what's funny is the three sweeps we nailed. Okay. We got all three right.
All right.
One that wasn't a sweep was the LA Dodgers. Preseason win total was at 96.5. They ended with 100 wins. So 4 wins better than Vegas was expecting them to finish at. You and I had the over, so we won. Arm had the under 96.5. And I don't remember his his reasoning. I think he was like, these are the most flaws that we've seen.
Betting against
the
Dodgers?
No Lux. He was like, yeah, you know, Miguel Rojas is playing shortstop. I don't know if they survived that. And then it turned out that Mookie Betts was playing shortstop. And I think our reasoning was as simple as they're the freaking Dodgers. They're just going to win 100 games. That's how life works.
Exactly. That's how life works. Weird year for the Dodgers overall. I mean, Walker Buehler was on this show, right-handed pitcher. He was not on the mound, right? Julio Urias.
You're with us, jackasses.
Yeah, Julio Urias. You know, I don't think we even need to talk about what's going on there until we have more information, but I think everybody listening knows exactly what happened with the Julio Urias situation. Dustin May looks great, gets hurt, tale as old as time. Kershaw pitched really well during the regular season, but at this point in his career, you're not going to get more than 120 to 130 innings. So it was a lot of Ryan Pepiot, who pitched really well, right? It was a lot of just this arm here, then this arm here, then like that random guy, and then they would get it through, and then the bullpen came through, and the Dodgers would score five, and it's like, well, Dodgers won 5-3, and I don't even know who pitched for them.
Right, so it was Gratterall opening games. It was Pepiot, who was really good. It was Bobby Miller, who was really good. It was Stone, who wasn't. It was Sheehan, who was fine, and then he wasn't fine. Ryan Yarbrough threw a lot for that. It was Lance Lynn at the end of the year. It was mix and match, and they still won 100 games because they had the runner-up and the third-place finisher and NL MVP.
I think in the Dave Roberts tenure, it was his best year as a manager. While it obviously did not come to be in the postseason, which is why every Dodgers fan every year after they lose in the postseason wants Dave Roberts fired, it was a masterclass by him this year. Absolute masterclass. Look at the guys who were on this team. Like after Freddie, Mookie, and Will Smith, look at that lineup. It was not good. Like Muncy did his thing, but didn't he hit below 200 again? Right? Like it was a lot of Hayward and like Outman was great, then bad. There was just so much inconsistency here. But when you have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman at the top of your lineup with Will Smith doing Will Smith things, the offense comes to play more often than not. And if you flip one run games, Dodgers would have won 99 games. So it wasn't like unlucky or anything. I think the reason the Dodgers were so successful this year, above the guys on the field, of course, and Freddie, Mookie, and Will Smith and the pitching, was Dave Roberts. I thought he was fantastic this season.
So Muncy hit 212, but he had 36 pumps and 105 driven in. Holy shit.
Common Max Muncy year.
Jason Hayward played 124 games, had an 813 OPS, a career rejuvenation for Jason Hayward. Shout out James Outman, man. When you look at R war, B war, however you want to say it, Mookie, Freddie, Will Smith, Kershaw, James Outman.
Yeah.
He was great. And then you had Muncy, then Gratterall, then Bobby Miller, then J.D. Martinez. J.D. Martinez was a nice, steady force. Outman was the sung hero. I don't want to call him unsung because he was a finalist for NL Rookie of the Year, but he was so valuable. And Hayward was incredibly valuable, too. So shout out the Dodgers for winning again. And when the total comes out next year, I'm going to pick the over again because they're the Dodgers and they just do this.
Me, too. I think it's very easy. Arm. So, what a moron. What are you doing, Arm?
Arm. Clean sweep.
I have to take my licks now because I have been dreadful.
I understand. clean sweep all winners for us. We all had the under 93.5 wins for the San Diego Padres. They finished with 82. They had depth questions. and the depth and the top end talent was underwhelming this year.
The two teams I never believe in both leagues. San Diego Padres in the National League and the Toronto Blue Jays in the American League. Let me see you do it. They never, ever do. A lot of hype every year, and we'll see what happens. San Diego Padres. This one, they went under because they were insanely unlucky in one-run games. Number one team, if you flipped these one-run games, they would have finished 96-66. But it ain't just unlucky when all of that happens to you in a season. Padres fans probably hate this episode because they don't want to remember the days where they were up 5-3 and the bullpen blew it and they looked lifeless. They don't want to remember the runners left in scoring position, game in, game out, at home, on the road, during the day, at night, didn't matter. The San Diego Padres did not drive in runners when they were on second and third. They don't want to talk about the days where the Padres were down by a couple of runs and the offense said, we'll get them back tomorrow. That's what the San Diego Padres did. Whenever it was close, they would lose. They would need to win with margin. And when they didn't, by the fourth inning, everybody could leave Petco Park because they knew the end result. It was embarrassing of a season. We saw, how many reports did we see? This player doesn't like this player. The clubhouse is a nightmare. All this different stuff. It was a lost season coming off an NLCS berth. The first time the Padres showed, hey, we're contenders here. We sell out every game. We spend all this money. We're amazing. We have every player. And that's why I'm so pissed about my Mets. Them and the Padres are very similar.
Yeah.
And I went over with the Mets like an idiot. I knew they were going under, but I still went over. Thankfully, went under with the Padres.
I'm cooking with gas. I did the final calculation. I'm coming in at a very high clip, and I'm going to do yours in a minute,
okay,
too.
Okay.
But San Francisco, again, a clean sweep. This one was a nail biter. Their over-under was set at 80.5. They finished at 79 wins. It was close. All three of us went under, so we looked like geniuses. Why do you think they went under? My reasoning is I think they lacked star power to be a 500 team. I think to be a 500 team in Major League Baseball, you do need a little bit of star power, and they had none. You can call Logan Webb a star, but I struggle to, when your best player is a pitcher, I struggle to think that you can be a 500 team, and they were just under that.
Yeah, exactly. They whiffed on a lot of the big-time free agents in the offseason. Remember, they gave Arson Judge that much money. I think they were in the Xander Bogaerts sweepstakes. They were in a lot. They really tried to go all in the offseason and just no big-time free agent. I think they were in on Correa. No big-time free agent chose them. And they were left with a team with Tyro Estrada being like their best offensive piece, with JD Davis, with Mike Yastrzemski, right? You got really, really fun additions from guys like Patrick Bailey, right? At the catching position, looks like the long-term option there. But overall, you looked around the diamond and said, Wilmer Flores is our three hitter. Great season from Wilmer, but come on. That's why we went under. There was, you said it perfectly, lack of star power. It wasn't due to some crazy unlucky streak. I actually think they kind of outperformed what I thought they were going to be. The Giants, again, kind of lucky, right? You flip those one-run games, they finished 73-89. I think they were a 75-win team that got lucky in a couple of games, but they do have the Velociraptor, Camilo Doval. That's why they win those games at the end. Their bullpen was very, very good. That's what I will give them credit for. Bullpen games, they always seem to sneak it out. They would surprise good teams. I remember so many games during the dog days. They went into Atlanta with Jacob Junis on the mound against Spencer Strider, and they would win those games. Like, they were never a team that you can overlook, but at the same time, they just weren't talented enough to withstand a 162-game schedule.
I think 2024 is going to be a different story for them. I do think that they're going to spend some massive money in free agency. I still think that they are going to get Shohei Ohtani. I don't know when it happens, but I've been saying it since March, like April, that the Giants should be considered in the Ohtani sweepstakes. I still truly feel that. And I think that he's going to be part of a two-player at least package that is heading to San Francisco. I don't think it's going to be Ohtani and Yamamoto. I don't know if it's going to be Ohtani and Bellinger. I think that's more likely than Ohtani and Yamamoto, but I do think it's going to be at least one of those marquee guys and then another to follow.
Do you predict right now that Ohtani's going to be a Giant?
Yes.
I still think he's going to be an Angel. There's just a part of me that feels like Ohtani's going to stay with the Angels.
I think that ship is
so boring. I don't know. I don't know if it has.
It sailed.
We'll see. I think he's more likely a Dodger than he is a Giant, personally.
Cub?
I could see that. I would pick the Cubs over the Giants, too.
Interesting. I'm going Cubs-Giants. I'm going Giants 1, Cubs 2, Dodgers 3.
Yeah, I'd go Dodgers, Cubs, Giants.
Okay, but Angels 1.
Yeah, Angels won.
You fascinate.
I do think he's going to stay with the Angels.
You fascinate me. All right. Arizona, clean sweep on the over. Easy. Easy. This was the most confident you were in any single pick that we had. They go to the World Series after winning 84 regular season games. Their over-under win total was set at 75.5. All of us had the over. Carroll was somehow better than we expected. Gallen was somehow better than we expected until the very end. Merrill Kelly was somehow better than we expected. Everybody could tell Marte bounced back.
What I will say is I don't know if Carroll was better than we expected because you know me. What was I probably doing at the beginning of the year being like, Carroll's going to have an 8-win season? He actually probably underperformed by insane hyperbole.
Dude, insane hyperbole aside, if you had just minor hyperbole,
yeah,
he exceeded the minor hyperbole. Any standard that I think a reasonable person set for him, he flew past it. So they were guided by the best players on their team. Geraldo Perdomo having an out-of-body experience for the first month of the season was really cool. And they got enough from the complimentary pieces. Evan Longoria, Canzone for a minute there. The beat goes on.
Yeah, the beat goes on. Training for Paul Sewald.
Yeah.
Such a great deal. Kevin Ginkle and his enormous nutsack. Plenty of good relievers back there. The rotation held up. Fought was not good during the regular season, but we see what he's going to be moving forward. Tommy Henry was good, you know, in spots. Ryan Nelson was not, but, you know, you lost those games. That's why he didn't win 100 games, right? You won 84 games. But what I will say is something I want to compliment us on. We have been very good in identifying the one team that nobody's really paying attention to that is always in the mid-70s. We have been nails with them. Orioles, Diamondbacks. And I already have a team in my back pocket that I've floated you. I haven't told Arm yet that I've floated you guys already for that next team that I think is going to take a massive step up. We'll talk about them when we get to the American League. Hint, American League Central. But all credit to the Diamondbacks. Elite defensively, hit when it mattered, pitched when it matters, closed the game down when it mattered. We just thought this team was too good on so many areas of the ball to be a mid-70s team, right? They were so great on the base pass, so great defensively. They were average hitting, average pitching. We were like, they're going to do enough to get over this. They went way over it. Did we think they were going to make the World Series? No. Was it incredibly fun to watch them? Yes, yes, yes. What a season. What a season.
Yeah. And wrapping up a perfect division for yours truly, I was the only one with the under 65.5 wins for the Colorado Rockies. And they're my team. Just knew that they didn't have any talents. 59 wins for the Colorado Rockies, 6 below what they were anticipated at. They lost more than 100 games. You had the over 65.5. Arm had the over 65.5. And I had the under 65.5. I think they went under because they don't have much talent.
Yeah, they went under because they stink out loud. That's why. Because they play on the moon and it's literally unfair and I don't blame them at all.
And
they
Marquez and Senzatella got hurt and Bryant was unavailable again. Like
they fit MLB systems when it comes to betting. Like the Rockies have played a long homestand, bet against them in their first game on the road. Like that is a cash counter. Right? Like, it's so hard to do what they do. And then on top of it, they didn't really have any good players. But we did talk about how good Nolan Jones was, right? Ezekiel Tovar, arguably clutchest player in the league by the clutch stat on Fangraphs. If you don't believe me, open up Fangraphs. I know, I don't really believe it either, but it's the fact that it's there. Brenton Doyle was a good defender.
Yeah, he won a Gold Glove.
John Gray pitched for them, right?
No.
Obviously not. But that's like they have the ghost of John Gray on the mound. That was their starting rotation this year. It was a lot of Peter Lambert. It was a lot of not Antonio Senzatella. It was a lot of not Herman Marquez. It was Kyle Freeland. It was, I mean, Denelson Lamet was throwing innings for them. They had the worst pitching staff I've ever seen. And then the bullpen, like, I'm a Justin Lawrence guy. Daniel Bard had a good season. But there was just so much ugh back there. But they have Kyle Quantrill now. So I'm a Rocktober guy again.
Nolan Jones in 106 games had a 930 OPS. Aside from that, the highest OPS they got was from Charlie Blackmon at 803 in 96 games.
Yeah, and CJ Crone not being an answer either stunk.
By OPS plus, Sean Bouchard at a 165 in 21 games. Jones had a 138 in 106 games. Grichuk had a 120 in 64 games. But among like everyday players, aside from Nolan Jones, Blackmon was at 107 in 96 games. Everybody else was under 100. Ryan McMahon was at 93. Elias Diaz was at 86. Elijah Montero was at 82. Harold Castro played 100 games. He was at 52. Like nobody performed well in that offense.
They stole the All-Star Game MVP and Elias Diaz.
Yeah, timely homers, man.
That's going to be such a good trivia question in 10 years. Just remember, 2023 All-Star Game MVP, Elias Diaz, catcher, Colorado Rockies.
Elias had that homer into the bullpen in left field, right?
Off Felix Bautista.
Off Bautista. Damn. Okay, so real quick, running through the National League again. Atlanta went over 95.5. All three of us had the over. The Mets went under 92.5. You two had the over. I had the under. Philly went over 88.5. All three of us had the under. Miami, 76.5. You two had the under. I had the over. Washington, over 59.5. You had the under. Arm and I had the over. So that was a tough go. Were you 1-4 in the NL East?
1-4. I think I just had the Braves.
And I was 4-1. I missed on the Phillies, and that was it. The Central, St. Louis went under 89.5. You had the under, Arm and I had the over. Milwaukee, over 85.5. You had the under, Arm and I had the over. The Cubs went over 77.5. All three of us had the under. Cincinnati went over 65.5. All three of us had the over. Pirates went over 67.5. You two had the under. I had the over. So I went 4-1 again in there. No, I went 3-2 in there. What'd you do?
I think I either went 1-4 or 2-3.
I think you went 2-3.
Okay.
And then the NL West, over 96.5 for the Dodgers. You had the over. I had the over. Arm had the under. Padres, 93.5. All three of us went under. San Francisco went under 80.5. All three of us went under. Arizona, 75.5. All three of us went over. And then Colorado, under 65.5. You two went over. I went under. So that was a 5-0 division for me. You and Aram enter at 7-8 in the National League. I went 12-3 in the National League.
Round of applause for Mr. McMullen. 12-3. That is surgical as shit. Congratulations, Arm and I.
I don't even do this shit. I'm the one that's not allowed to bet.
Doesn't even do this shit. That's gambling for you, guy. Well, you do know baseball, right? We are going over and under. Arm and I need to rebound on the American League side. If Jack goes over, still a pretty damn good year for Jack. 12-3, ensured himself the winner, I think, of this competition. We call it a competition. We like to see how we do. I was last year's winner. Just want to make that clear. I was last year's winner. This year, I might be headed for the cellar. That's just how it is. And hopefully, everybody enjoyed this episode of the Just Baseball Show. We'll be back, of course, on Monday. We got to start going through the American League. And if you could subscribe on YouTube, that would be huge. I mean, that would just be huge. Click that big red button. You do have to pay for it. Oh, wait. No, you don't. It's free. Come on. Just hit the big red button. How about the like? How about the comment button? And if you'd be so kind to rate and review on podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, we really, really appreciate you. Want to do one more shout out. All the Spotify raps that you guys tagged us in, man, that is just the best thing ever. Thank you guys so much. Tagging us on Twitter, tagging us on Instagram, all that good stuff, just to see how many people have been listening for 10, 15,000 minutes over the last year. I did the math. You guys have listened to every episode. Cannot thank you enough. We would not be here without you guys. So just want to say again, another thank you from all of us here at Just Baseball for making the Just Baseball Show your podcast when you're driving to work, driving home from work, at the gym, cooking food, whatever you're doing. Thank you so much. We'll be back on Monday. Get yourself some Just Baseball merch. And with that, thank you, everybody.